on this Saturday night, brutally murdered. The terror group ISIS claims to have beheaded another hostage after a deal for his freedom seemed so close. What went wrong? More than 2 million vehicles recalled again due to faulty airbags. Why wasn't the problem fixed the first time? Found unresponsive, Whitney Houston's daughter rushed to the hospital after being found unconscious in a bathtub. Taking a stand, some of the country's top universities make some big changes to prevent sexual assault, but it's not without some controversy. And no fly zone. The debate over drones and a stark warning from the FAA ahead of tomorrow's big game.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening. We begin tonight with grim news out of the Middle East. A video that surfaced within the last several hours purporting to show the beheading of another Japanese hostage by one of his ISIS captors. The victim appears to be freelance war correspondent Kenji Goto. He would be the second Japanese citizen to be killed by ISIS in just a week. In recent days, his fate has been tied to that of a failed suicide bomber held by authorities in Jordan. Jordan is where we begin tonight. Our Bill Neely is outside the Japanese embassy in Amman. Bill, good evening.
Good evening, Lester. Yes, two nations united in horror here tonight. ISIS has already beheaded five American, British, and Japanese hostages. Kenji Goto appears to be the sixth. Another journalist, another father, another innocent witness to Syria's civil war, murdered, it appears, in cold blood. Dressed for a brutal death, Kenji Goto. Behind him with a knife, a man with a British accent who has appeared in other ISIS videos. Japan's government reacting with horror. We can't hold back our fury, he says, at such a despicable act. Kenji Goto was a journalist who believed his Japanese nationality might protect him in Syria. He was kidnapped just hours after entering the country 4 months ago. He'd gone in part to search for another Japanese hostage. Both, it seems, are now dead. Goto killed in spite of desperate appeals to ISIS from his mother and from his wife, who spoke of their two daughters, one just 3 weeks old. We will, said Japan's Prime Minister, never forgive them for this. We will not give in to terrorism. Japan had believed a deal could be done to free Goto. ISIS wanted this woman, held prisoner in Jordan, to be swapped for Goto. They also held this Jordanian pilot. Jordan wanted proof he was alive before releasing the woman. Deadlines came and went. Now Goto, it appears, is dead. And the pilot's family are praying for his release. Mourning in Japan, agony in Jordan, as tonight the life of yet another hostage hangs in the balance.
Well, ISIS is also holding a young American woman and a British journalist, John Cantley. And within the last hour, Kenji Goto's mother has said he went to save his fellow countrymen. Please understand his kindness and his bravery. Lester.
All right, Bill Neely tonight in Amman. Thank you. Back at home, there's a major recall involving some of the most popular cars on the road. And if it sounds familiar, it's because we've been down this road before. The issue, potentially faulty airbags. And it involves vehicles that have been recalled for this same problem before. NBC's Kristen Welker has our report tonight.
In a major announcement today, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration said it is recalling about 2.1 million vehicles, Toyotas, Chryslers, and Hondas. The concern? The vehicle's airbags could deploy inadvertently, even when the vehicle is not in a crash, potentially causing injury or even death. These vehicles were previously recalled for the same problem in 2013 and 2014, but NHTSA says the fix, quote, was not effective. Today's recall was triggered by a problem in an electric component made by an American supplier, TRW Automotive. But about a million of the recalled Honda and Toyota models also have defective airbags made by the company Takata. Those airbags have been known to deploy with too much force, sending out metal shards. In relation to a previous recall, 26-year-old Corey Burdick says he lost his right eye due to a malfunctioning Takata airbag last May.
I thought I had a black eye, and I felt blood, you know, warm run down my face, and I have blood. I thought I broke my nose. I didn't know.
Late last year, both Honda and Takata executives apologized at a congressional hearing.
We are deeply sorry about each of the reported instances.
The latest recalled vehicles include the Acura MDX, Dodge Viper, Jeep Grand Cherokee, Jeep Liberty, Honda Odyssey, Pontiac Vibe, Toyota Corolla, Toyota Matrix, and Toyota Avalon, all models made in the early 2000s.
Consumers, the minute they get that recall notice, should immediately take their vehicles to be fixed.
Now, according to NHTSA, there were no deaths related to this latest defect, but three people were injured. We reached out to the car manufacturers who have said they will comply. Lester?
Kristen, thank you. We're getting late word this evening about the daughter of the late singer Whitney Houston. Bobby Christina Brown was found unresponsive in her Georgia home this morning in a scene eerily similar to the way her mother died nearly 3 years ago. NBC's Gabe Gutierrez is outside the hospital in Roswell, Georgia. Gabe, good evening.
Lester, good evening. Police say Bobby Christina Brown is alive and breathing here at the hospital. At this point, detectives are treating this as a medical call and do not believe there was any foul play. This morning, she was found unresponsive in a bathtub. Police were called to her home outside Atlanta. When they arrived, Brown's husband, Nick Gordon, was performing CPR. The 21-year-old is the only child of Whitney Houston and R&B singer Bobby Brown. So far, no comment from family members. Almost exactly 3 years ago, Houston, widely regarded as one of the greatest singers of all time, was found dead in a bathtub at a Beverly Hills hotel. Authorities concluded she had accidentally drowned, but heart disease and cocaine use were listed as contributing factors. Tonight, her daughter remains here at the hospital, and a police investigation is underway to find out exactly what happened. Lester.
All right, Gabe Gutierrez tonight. Thank you. Tonight, there are heightened concerns about the recent measles outbreak. On the East Coast, a new case potentially exposed thousands of travelers. And in the West, the impact of the outbreak is being felt at the Super Bowl. Here's NBC's Hallie Jackson.
The day before the Super Bowl, Phoenix is full of fans from all over the country, like the Nelsons. But two-month-old Juliet stayed back home in New Mexico.
She hasn't even had her measles shot yet, so we just decided this was too crowded a venue for her to come to.
They're worried about the measles outbreak that's now in 14 states, including Arizona.
Measles is one of the most infectious agents on the planet. And if you aren't protected and come into contact with someone who's sick, your chances of getting ill are about 90%.
But health officials say the chances of being exposed to the measles virus at the Super Bowl are tiny, though there has been a new exposure in New York, where a Bard College student boarded a train at Penn Station, one of the nation's busiest transportation centers.
I'm vaccinated, so it doesn't really bother me. And 8 trillion people coming through here, one person's not changing anything for me.
The measles virus can survive a couple of hours in the air or on surfaces, incredibly contagious, but incredibly preventable if people get immunized. But in the epicenter of this latest outbreak, California, about 3% of parents choose not to vaccinate their kindergartners for personal or religious reasons. The rates are even higher in other states, like Oregon, where it's 7%, and in Idaho, Vermont, Michigan, and Maine. Doctors say the measles shot doesn't just protect you or your child. It protects everyone else's, too.
Don't get vaccinated just for yourself. Do it so that you're not a vector of disease to somebody who might get into even more serious trouble than you may if they get it.
Because there are so many people here in town for the Super Bowl, public health officials have a lot of ways to monitor the spread of any illnesses. Even some hotels are on alert to let the county know if, say, hotel gift shops sell out of a certain kind of medicine. Lester?
Allie Jackson tonight. Thank you. Tomorrow's Super Bowl is not only the granddaddy of sporting events, it is also the big one for security teams. With a packed stadium and the eyes of the world glued on the action, it's the one challenge of the day in which losing is truly not an option. NBC's Ron Mott has our report from the site of the big game.
With less than 24 hours to kick off, Super Bowl security is about to kick into high alert.
What we're looking for the Super Bowl is anything like a weapon of mass destruction, any explosive, anything that's out of the ordinary.
And they're scanning high and low for trouble. F-16 fighter jets will join Black Hawk helicopters patrolling the no-fly zone above the stadium. On the ground, SWAT teams, canines, thousands of officers and security personnel in uniform and undercover, safeguarding the game and the crowd of more than 71,000 fans.
You've got eyes pretty much on this entire facility.
We do, both inside and out.
It's the third Super Bowl in Arizona, and the man in charge of coordinating 40-plus agencies on the security detail says familiarity hasn't brought complacency.
A lot of us are waking up at 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning, running things through our heads, what could go wrong.
Are you on the phone with her?
From this undisclosed location,
yeah, they're actually in route. So
officials keep close watch on the festivities with more than 500 high-tech surveillance cameras in place. Techs even scanning social media for threats. Nothing is left to chance. The recent terrorist attacks in France adding to the heightened sense of urgency and vigilance.
You can never relax your guard, and we know that, especially in light of what happened in Paris.
Today, visible security remain largely in the background. Come tomorrow, it's front and center.
There is a very visible presence, and that's to make sure that everybody has the confidence that they can do what they came here to do, enjoy the fan experience the Super Bowl has to offer.
Hosting the Super Bowl is a coveted prize, but it's expensive. Security alone here is expected to top out between $2 and $3 million, perhaps a bit more. And now comes the challenging part for the cities involved, trying to figure out how to pay for it all, Lester.
All right, Ron, thank you. Tomorrow's game comes after what's no doubt been a controversial season for the NFL. Among the issues casting a shadow over the sport, concussions and the growing number of cognitive problems suffered by former players. NBC's Chuck Todd spoke with two-time Super Bowl champ Leonard Marshall about the impact it's had on him.
I would forget things. I would forget places. I would have these shouting matches with my wife for no reason. Mm. I would have this erratic behavior towards my child for no reason. I would do things that didn't make a lot of sense.
This scary?
Scared the daylights out of me. And I started talking to people, and I started to figure out I'm not in this by myself.
You can catch more of this interview and the larger discussion of sports and politics tomorrow on Meet the Press here on NBC. This week, some of the country's top colleges announced they're drawing a hard line on drinking and partying. It's all aimed at preventing sexual assaults on campus. But the measures aren't without criticism. Here's NBC's Stephanie Gosk.
Is the wild, alcohol-fueled college party a rite of passage or the root of a larger problem? This week, Dartmouth banned hard alcohol on campus, part of a broad plan hoping to bring an end to binge drinking and sexual assault.
We are not alone in facing them, but we will lead in saying no more.
Some students at the Ivy League school seem to embrace the goal, if not the method.
It's probably not a popular decision, but it's probably in the best interest of student health.
An estimated 40% of college kids binge drink. For women, that's four beers. And for men, it's five in under 2 hours. The Dartmouth decision came just days after 16 national sorority leaders banned their University of Virginia chapters from going to fraternity parties this weekend. In a letter, the sorority presidents wrote, "We believe the activities present significant safety concerns for all of our members." The mandate sparked criticism.
I think it sends the message that women are weak, and I think I'm better than that. I think I'm smarter and more powerful than just hiding in my home whenever I feel as though I'm in danger.
The university had already put in place new rules and sexual assault policies after a now discredited report in Rolling Stone alleged a gang rape at a fraternity. Other universities are facing scrutiny as well. This week, two former Vanderbilt football players were convicted of raping a fellow student in 2013.
I'm just sorry. I never intended on hurting anyone. I was extremely intoxicated.
Just some of the cases that have triggered schools around the country to take action.
A lot of people are trying to do the right thing, and now is really a time for us to identify the best practices and figure out how to scale them up.
Cracking down on partying is important, activists say, but real cultural change will take more than just new rules. Stephanie Gosk, NBC News, New York.
For a second weekend in a row, we're watching a sizable winter storm on the march. This one delivering snow and frigid temperatures from the plains on into the northeast eventually. Meteorologist Dylan Dreyer joins us with more on that. Dylan?
Good evening, Lester. About 70 million people are under some sort of winter weather advisory right now from Iowa, Nebraska, all the way up into New England. The storm right now producing rain down through Texas. Snow, though, filling in through Omaha. We'll see heavier snow move into the Chicago area and stay as snow throughout the entire day on Sunday. Now, we do have to watch this rain-snow line. You can see as we go into early Monday morning in New York City, we should see a transition from snow over to a wintry mix. We might even see that transition in Boston as well. So that'll determine just how much snow we see. Chicago will stay as all snow. We're looking at easily a foot. Same goes for southern parts of Michigan and into northwestern Ohio. Most of New England will see a foot of snow. New York closer to about 3 to 6 inches. Boston, we have to watch it. There could be another foot of snow headed that way, Lester.
All right, Dylan, thanks. We'll see you in the morning on Today. When Nightly News continues on this Saturday, the battle over drones and the new way they're being kept out of places they don't belong. And later, curious who will be the smartest person at tomorrow's Super Bowl? Turns out she might just be cheering from the sidelines. That security blanket we told you about surrounding tomorrow's Super Bowl will also be on the lookout for the prying eyes of drones. Lately, they're ending up in places they shouldn't be, like around manned aircraft and over secure areas. Now, one of the biggest makers of drones says it's found a way to prevent them from flying into the danger zone. Our Ian Williams traveled to Shenzhen, China, to get the story.
Going to the big game?
A Super Bowl warning from the FAA.
Keep it a no-drone zone.
Just days after a drone crash landed on the White House lawn, sparking a security alert, and another near the Mexican border, smuggling 6 pounds of drugs. Both were made by a Chinese company based here in Shenzhen, and which has been in urgent discussion with the FAA.
We are working with them on a daily basis.
The company's product manager told us they've now come up with a software fix that will prevent their drones from flying in downtown D.C. or any other restricted airspace.
We've implemented a no-fly zone, a 5-mile radius around airports. So this basically prevents one of our multi-rotors to take off.
It's being called a geofence and will work through the drone's GPS system, keeping certain locations off limits.
Now I'm recording.
DJI is the world's biggest consumer drone producer. As U.S. sales have boomed, the FAA has been receiving about 25 reports a month of drones flying near manned aircraft, forcing them to draw up new rules.
Consumer drones are opening up a dizzying new world of possibilities and challenges. And not for the first time with the new technology, the regulators are struggling to keep up.
Balancing privacy and security concerns against the promise of a revolutionary new technology.
Every day we're seeing lots and lots of new ideas.
Nice hand.
One idea from the UCLA football team, which recently brought in a drone to help them train and analyze their game. But that won't make them any more welcome in Phoenix tomorrow.
Don't spoil the game. Drone at home.
Ian Williams, NBC News, Shenzhen, China.
When we come back, the dramatic rescue that earned one lucky dog a new name. A daring rescue on the Los Angeles River yesterday after a small dog was swept up in its raging waters during a sudden rainstorm. A firefighter was lowered by helicopter and managed to get a hold of the pooch. The two were then pulled to safety. No word yet on who the dog belongs to, but for the time being, he's going to be known by the name Lucky. It was a lot more than luck that sent a pair of balloonists flying into the history books today. Their helium-filled balloon landed safely off of Mexico's Baja coast this morning after a nearly 7,000-mile journey across the Pacific Ocean from Japan. The week-long trip shattered balloon endurance and distance records that had stood for decades. And up next, cheerleading meets rocket science at the Super Bowl. Finally tonight, the cheerleaders at tomorrow's Super Bowl will be among some of the most talented and beautiful people at the game, no doubt. But it turns out that same group of women might also be among the smartest people on the field. Here's NBC's Kristen Dahlgren.
New England Patriots' Melanie Sanchez has everything you'd expect from a Super Bowl cheerleader. She's beautiful, bubbly, and brainy?
My dream was always to become a dentist.
The woman who spends any given Sunday on the NFL sidelines spends the rest of the week at Tufts Dental School.
I think what I'm doing is totally doable. You can have a career in the science field or in any field and dance and do cheerleading.
She's not alone. Teammate Kelly Banyan is an aspiring neuroscientist, dubbed by one article, the smartest person at the Super Bowl.
You got your master's at Harvard. Now you're getting your PhD. You're not what a lot of people think of when they think of cheerleader.
Well, that's my message to young girls, is that you really can have it all.
To spread that message, they've teamed up with a group called Science Cheerleaders with a rather impressive roster.
Brittany Bonchuk, New England Patriots, licensed clinical social worker.
Samantha Sanders, Arizona Cardinals alumni, mechanical engineering.
Summer Wagner, Houston Texans alumni, NASA engineer.
It turns out cheering can be rocket science. The cheerleaders now have an experiment flying on the International Space Station.
Microbial ecology research combining citizen and university researchers on the International Space Station.
No idea what you just said.
But they are getting through to young girls.
Go science!
Inspiring them to follow all their dreams.
A cheerleader, a doctor,
a professional NFL cheerleader, and a dentist.
A cheerleader and a dentist? Do you think you can do both?
And at a time when women make up less than a quarter of the science and technology workforce, that might be the biggest win of all.
I want to be a microbiologist.
Kristen Dahlgren, NBC News, Phoenix, Arizona.
That's NBC Nightly News for this Saturday. A reminder, coverage of the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 49, begins at noon Eastern time tomorrow right here on NBC. I'm Lester Holt reporting from New York. I'll see you tomorrow morning on Today. Good night.